on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today's Monday, December 22nd, 2025. Woo! It's almost here! The holidays are upon us, and before you know it, it will be 2026. Today was one of the last few full trading days of the year. We have one, two, three, four more left in 2025. And so as the year ends, you start to see similar patterns. Rallying, the Santa Claus rally, they call it. Stocks that have lost tend to continue to do so as loss harvesting happens, and volumes in a way tend to dry up. But in spite of all this, it does not mean that we can stop paying attention because news does not wait. News does not care what time of year it is. And so that's why, even though the holidays are right around the corner, mere days away, we have not stopped paying attention. We here at Invest Talk still meet each and every day with one goal: to help make you a better and more informed investor. How do we do that? Well, we bring a mixture of educational items, of actionable material to go over each and every show. But you are also a critical part of this program. Your finance and investment questions help steer the conversation towards what matters most to you. Now, this year, we also did something a little bit new. We produced the first ever Invest Talk holiday special, which has already dropped exclusively on our YouTube. It was a kind of a way of doing a fun year-end episode where we looked back at the biggest market themes. We highlighted some lessons that we learned. We talked about our favorite caller question of the year and also talked about what we can expect going into 2026. So that sounds interesting. The Invest Talk holiday special, it's free to watch. It's on our YouTube. Just search Invest Talk with two T's. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hi, I was calling to get your take on ticker Xylem, XYL. Love to hear your thoughts on it. Thanks. Have a good day.
Xylem, ticker XYL, is a global water technology company. I think we've had a couple calls about this particular name. It's fairly large, $33.796 billion market cap. Only got about $2.2 billion in debt, so not too much leverage on its balance sheet. More on the healthier side here. Year to date, it's up 19.9%, up 18.76%. Over the past 52 weeks, and one of the reasons why, well, you have solid revenue growth, really going all the way back to 2019, growth about 10.3% on an annualized basis. But more recently, I mean, growth has been stellar from 2022, up from $5.5 billion in revenue to $8.5 billion this most recent year, projected to be $9 billion this upcoming fiscal year end, which ends in December. Net income has been growing 17.3% on an annualized basis. And it's really benefited from this non-discretionary essential infrastructure spending on water transport, on treatment, on wastewater systems, and more smart metering. It's had strong financials recently. In recent quarters, it has beaten and raised in the first half of the year its 2025 guidance. And, I mean, it pays a regular quarterly dividend that's small but consistent, right? You see this consistency. It's floated around 1% over the past 5 years. Now, it's doing this at a pretty reasonable valuation as well, sitting at 24.9 times price to forward-looking earnings, 3.0 times price to book value, about the middle end of its range. And so you got a question, you know, is this going to continue? Well, you know, there is going to be continuous infrastructure spending, right? Water scarcity is a serious issue, and technological adoption in a way that can help wastewater management is something that cities are going to continue to invest in. So there is a bit of a secular tailwind here. But, right, budgets, city budgets, municipal budgets, they are a bit cyclical. Infrastructure spending tends to ebb and flow. There is also competition here within this space. And although it's trading near the mid of its, or below the average over the past 5 years, it is still a bit expensive. Now, from a momentum perspective, it has lost a little bit since the middle of November, okay, when it was trading at about $150 a share. So, you know, heading into the new year, we did recently get earnings. Earnings were solid. It is a well-established industrial and water technology name. I actually like this name. I think it trades at more reasonable valuation than it has in a while with solid return on equity for this sector, right? 10.9 times. So overall, I kind of like Xylem, ticker XL, or rather XYL. Thanks for the call. Got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this topic, active management's edge in fixed income. Passive bond funds, some are saying they're broken. And so we're going to expose why the current high yield, high volatility market is proving that active management offers, in some ways, better risk mitigation and a measurable edge. Also, we'll touch on the biggest market developments of 2025. Whether or not in this environment, shifting towards those consumer staple names that historically have given some safety, is that still the case? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on how central banks are signaling that the rate cutting cycle may soon be ending. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Cheniere Energy, ticker LNG, and cash positions, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. We're going into a break. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. Hang on, because I'm going to talk about today's market activity when we return.
For the holidays, KPP Financial is excited to introduce a high-value, limited-time offer, the Holiday Estate Bundle. It's specifically designed to help new households quickly establish a solid foundation for their financial and personal legacies before the year ends. When you begin a financial relationship with KPP Financial and complete your onboarding by December 31st, 2025, you'll receive essential estate planning documents as an added benefit, and it's all powered by our trusted partner, Trust and Will. Learn more about the Holiday Estate Bundle now at investtalk.com, and while you're there, fill out a portfolio review to get started. And now the phone lines are open and waiting for your finance and investment questions, 888-99-CHART. The new year is almost here, and it's a safe bet to assume you might have finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero, especially if you are wondering about potential tax implications. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you're trying to get through live to me before 5 p.m. Pacific. But until we get some live calls, why don't we tackle today's market performance? U.S. stocks closed higher across the board. The Dow was up 47 basis points. S&P 500 up 64. NASDAQ up 52. Russell 2000 up 1.16%. Ended a bit off of their best levels, though not too far. The NASDAQ and S&P now positive for the third straight session, and the S&P closing not far from a fresh all-time high. Retail investor favorites, those AI pick and shovel names, high beta stocks, small caps amongst the strongest performers of the day. Big tech mostly better with Tesla and Nvidia, the notable standouts amongst that group. Other outperformers included energy, large cap banks, investment banks, exchanges, credit cards, and asset managers. On the other side of the ball, though, relative underperformers included tech hardware, department stores, food, staple retailers, and home builders. The bond side, Treasury's a bit weaker. We did see some curve flattening with yields up anywhere from about 1 to 2 basis points. Dollar index off 30 basis points, a bit off of its worst levels for the day, while gold finished up 1.9%, setting a new record close. Crude oil, which has had a rough 2025, settled up as well, up 2.6%. You're starting to see, you know, the U.S. seizing another tanker, more actions near Venezuela, certainly been a driver of upward price movement in oil. Overall, though, pretty fairly quiet session, not many headlines. We did tease last week. You know, there's not a lot of news from a macro perspective happening this week. Obviously, it's a holiday shortened week. The big momentum really coming from, you know, the broad risk on that we saw later last week. There is continued positivity as well with AI sentiment, with headlines including NVIDIA preparing for its February launch of China sales of H200 chips and improving margins on paid products for OpenAI. Market largely, though, shrugging off, which it really has for most of this year, the geopolitical backdrop. While bullish talking points tend to focus on decent positioning across the market and what has historically been a positive season. There was a bit of Fed speak today, nothing really notable from that group. You had a mixture of people saying, okay, well, we need to wait and see, we need to pause, others saying we need to cut. Honestly, par for the course out of that. No economic data, as I mentioned, on the calendar today. Looking ahead, a big burst of data releases tomorrow, including the first estimate of Q3 GDP, October durable orders, November industrial production, December consumer confidence, and Richmond Fed manufacturing. Reminder, Wednesday is a shortened session, but we will get some jobless claims there. No trading on Thursday, and we'll be back on Friday. As you probably know by now, we do have content over on our YouTube channel to search InvestTalk with 2 T's. And while you're over there, if you have a question that is burning in your mind, there's no need to pick up the phone. There's no need to dial or do anything else other than put that question right in the comment section. So let's tackle one of those right now from our good friend Richard Lombardo. It's on tickers J and ACM. It says, I noticed both Jacobs Solutions, ticker J, and Aecon, ticker ACM, seem to be trading lower after disappointing earnings. With the estimated $3.4 trillion in water infrastructure needed, along with trillions more in industries such as transportation, could you compare the two and let me know what might be better, what might be a better ad? Well, we started the show talking about water, so why don't we continue talking about water? Ticker J, as I pull this up on my screen, is Jacob Solutions. My computer's being a little slow to load, but it's a diversified global engineering, consulting, and construction company. So they've got government contracts, they have industrial energy and infrastructure contracts as well. At the same time, AECOM, a multinational infrastructure consulting and engineering company, focuses on architecture, engineering, planning, and management. One's a bit larger than the other, but honestly, I'd put them in the same range. Jacobs, $15, $16 billion market cap. AECOM, about $13, $14 billion market cap there. From a revenue perspective, you did get a bit more revenue from the smaller name, though, and a bit more follow-through as well. You have EBITDA is better, cash on hand nearly triple. AECOM has triple the cash on hand. Volatility as well. You know, you'd expect with this smaller name, a bit more leverage. AECOM has about $3 billion in debt, whereas Jacobs has about $2.7 billion in debt. As expected, the smaller name has a bit more volatility. Now, AECOM typically trades at lower multiples here, right? And given the recent disappointment in earnings, it's trading, at least Jacobs is, near the low of its range. Let's take a look at where AECOM is trading right now. Near the low end of its range over the past 5 years. So, you know, why would you invest in either company? Well, right now, I think you're seeing really poor momentum from both, right? You don't know what this price discovery phase is going to be. There's a bit of a breakdown here. But, right, they are in part of important industries here. Jacobs, if you're looking for a broader footprint, you see tech, defense, environmental consulting, a bit higher historical growth and returns, more diversification across sectors. That's when you'd want to be towards Jacobs, whereas AECOM is a bit stronger revenue base in its infrastructure consulting, huge, huge cash, stable cash reserves, and a somewhat cheaper valuation, historically, albeit with a bit more volatility. Either way, you're seeing a bit of a breakdown post-earnings. So for now, if you're interested in either, I would keep them on my watch list. That is J and ACM. Headed into a break, still to come, my main focus point about active management's edge in fixed income, and more answers to your finance and investment questions. James from Sonoma, hang on, you will be next. This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment, an Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest 529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to James from Sonoma, who's got a question on WEC and is listening on AM 1220. How you doing, James?
I'm doing pretty good, pretty good. I've looked at this stock before. I've owned it before years and years ago. My goal here is to put it in the IRA. It will sit next to my NextEra Energy and my AEP. It's another energy stock, electric stock, that would it's going to get a piece of a Microsoft is putting up some sort of data center up there in Michigan or someplace like that. So it'll be a piece of that. But I'm looking forward more of a bond proxy. I mean, it's 3.7% dividend. It raises its dividend by about 7% a year. It's not thrilling. It's not exciting. But it's also not a tech stock that's going to get, you know, waved back and forth. It's just going to sit right there in my IRA and just do nothing but increase the dividend and hopefully raise the stock price. What's your opinion? Yay or nay?
Well, everything you said makes perfect sense for this name. WEC Energy, it's a regulated utility holding company out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So what they do is they provide electricity and natural gas services. They have about 4.5 to 5 million customers within their region. Now, it has done pretty well year-to-date, up 11.52%. Remember, utility companies tend to not be those big growers, right? They're exactly primarily used for what you're trying to use it for, as a bond proxy, giving you that yield stability over longer periods of time. And they have a pretty solid dividend. I mean, their dividend yield has been upwards of 3% over the past 4 years. Going back 6 years, it hasn't dipped below 2.5. Its beta is about 0.14 over the past 52 weeks. So volatility is incredibly low there. And it's benefiting from, you know, the stability of earnings, from strong institutional ownership, from people moving away from bonds as interest rates have fallen a little bit towards those bond proxies, and towards, you know, there's a lot of energy demand out there. There's a lot of energy demand from people. There's a lot of energy demand from, like you said, data centers. And so having utilities as a part of your portfolio for that defensive protection and for income is certainly a good idea. And I think this is a solid name. Exactly, using it, if you use it exactly for the purposes it seems like you're using it for. So I'd give it a yes. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Thank you very much and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Let's make it two in a row and tackle this question from our YouTube comment section. And it's on ticker HPQ. Let's pull that ticker up right here. Seems like my computer is already off for the holidays. It's moving a bit slow. HPQ is HP Inc., Information Technology Company, Hewlett Packard. And what they do is primarily personal computing and other access devices. It has had a rough year. Down 28.99% year to date, down 29.66% over the past 52 weeks. Revenue is up modestly. Actually, it's up modestly from 2024 into 2025, and I mean nearly as modestly as you can be, from $53 billion to $55 billion. But net income's fallen. Net income has been falling on average, right, over the past 6 years. 2021 was a great year. Revenue was $63 billion. Net income was $6.5 billion. But it's been downhill ever since. Return on equity, not great. Return on assets down to 6.2%, net margins down to 4.6% for a hardware company, a tech hardware company. And so when your device is oriented, you get locked in this cycle sometimes. You have demand cyclicality in PCs and print. You had volatility around earnings reactions, right? They often move downward over the past 3 years because each time has been a bit of a disappointment. And then you have on top of that, well, significant cost on one side and cost reduction on the other. Trying to reduce costs with layoffs, trying to drive efficiency, while at the same time trying to invest in an AI strategy. There's a reason why this name is trading at 7.5 times price to earnings, only 6 times price to cash flow. This is one of the situations where you hear a company, you think of its history, and you say to yourself, man, it's in a bad place, but it is going to recover. Well, looking here at the fundamentals, looking here at its poor momentum, there is nothing signaling to me that now would be a good time to buy. In fact, there is more here that I see that is telling me the exact opposite. So if you're looking for a discount, if you're looking for a deal, oftentimes you find yourself in a worse off position. I think this is one of those times. So for HPQ, for now, maybe in a little bit, I would keep it on my watch list. Thanks for the call. We are moving into a break coming up pretty soon, but I want to remind you once again about that fun episode we did over there on our Invest Talk YouTube channel. It is a holiday special because the holidays are a time for friends. The holidays are a time for family. The holidays are a time for reflection. So we felt that we here at Invest Talk are not immune from needing a bit of reflection about what we learned, what we got right, most importantly, what we got wrong, and how we can take those lessons into 2026, because it's not just you guys who are striving to become better and more informed investors. We're alongside there with you on that journey. So check it out over on our YouTube channel. It was a lot of fun to film. I think you'll enjoy. Still to come, more answers to your questions, my main focus point, and a bit more stories that has been driving the market lately. Stay with me. This is Invest Talk. It's a good idea for you to learn about NordProtect, an identity theft protection service you can trust. I've been looking into it, and I think you should too. NordProtect is built to help users safeguard their identity with advanced, automated features that work in the background 24/7, such as dark web monitoring, credit monitoring, and security alerts. NordProtect plans come with financial coverage across a wide range of threats, from identity theft to online fraud and scams, so their users are covered when it matters most. NordProtect is all-in-one identity theft protection that equips you with everything you need to keep your identity safe. NordProtect offers 3 types of plans: silver, gold, and platinum, so that every user can find the perfect fit for their budget. Getting started is simple. You just buy your plan and complete a quick setup. NordProtect comes with identity theft recovery and cyber extortion protection for your peace of mind. Get an exclusive 5% off on NordProtect plans. Go to nordprotect.com/investtalk and use the code investtalk at checkout. You can also find the link in the episode description. NordProtect.com/investtalk and use code InvestTalk.
For the holidays, KPP Financial is excited to introduce the Holiday Estate Bundle. When you begin a financial relationship with KPP Financial and complete your onboarding by December 31st, 2025, you'll receive essential estate planning documents as an added benefit. And it's all powered by our trusted partner, Trust and Will. Learn more about the Holiday Estate Bundle now at investtalk.com. And while you're there, fill out a portfolio review to get started. And now the phone lines are open and waiting for your finance and investment questions. 888-99-CHART.
The active versus passive debate is certainly raging on in fixed income, especially in today's market environment. Over the past decade, passive equity strategies have generally outperformed active managers, but bonds have flipped that script. In fixed income, active managers have outperformed passive bond benchmarks the majority of the time. And there's a lot of explanations, but one of them is really market structure. The U.S. equity market's relatively small, transparent, efficient. It's got about 3,000 public companies reporting standardized financials on a regular schedule. That transparency makes it hard on average for a lot of active stock pickers to consistently gain an edge over broad indices. The bond market is the exact opposite. Massive, fragmented, complex, with roughly $59 trillion in outstanding securities. Less than half of that universe is even represented in the Bloomberg U.S. Aggregate Bond Index, the benchmark most passive bond funds track. The AG, as it's called, excludes entire segments of the bond market, including high yield, bank loans, many asset-backed securities, non-agency mortgages, municipals, and floating rate debt. Passive bond funds are therefore locked into a narrow slice of the market, whether opportunities are attractive or not. That structural limitation helps explain why passive bond funds have struggled in the current environment. The AG is weighted by debt outstanding, meaning the biggest borrowers get the largest representation, not the strongest credit or the best values. And historically, that has forced passive investors into heavy exposure to sectors right before trouble emerged, from utilities in the 80s to telecoms in the early 2000s to financials ahead of the global financial crisis. Today, the same issue, it shows up through heavy concentrations in treasuries and agency securities, which now make up roughly 70% of the index. And with rates higher and volatility elevated, that concentration has let passive bond funds exposed to duration risk with, frankly, very limited flexibility. Active bond managers, by contrast, are not forced to own the most indebted issuers or even maintain static duration exposure. One of their key advantages is the ability to actively manage interest rate risk as conditions change. They can shorten duration when rates are rising, they can extend it when yields become more attractive, or they can just reposition altogether along the curve. Passive funds, they cannot do that. They simply reflect whatever duration the index carries at that moment. Active managers also have the flexibility to adjust credit exposure. They can dial risk up or down as the business cycle evolves. And that matters. That matters because bond investing is asymmetric. The upside is limited to coupons and principal repayment, while the downside from defaults or credit deterioration can go all the way to zero. Success in fixed income is often about avoiding mistakes rather than chasing the highest yield. This is where risk mitigation becomes a real value add of active bond management. Skilled managers can exit deteriorating credit before they drop out of indices, something passive strategies are structurally unable to do. They can also allocate to less followed, non-index sectors where complexity or illiquidity create an information premium. Those areas often compensate investors with higher spreads, with stronger structural protections, but only if the risks are properly analyzed. Now, of course, active management, it's not free, which leads to the natural question of fees. In fixed income, fees are justified when managers are demonstrating adding value through risk control, through downside protection, through consistent excess returns over a full cycle. Paying for a manager who actively manages duration, credit quality, sector exposure is fundamentally different than paying for a equity manager who is just giving you 10 large cap stocks. The real risk is not fees themselves, but paying active fees for a portfolio that really is just a closet indexer. So in today's environment of higher rates, heavier government debt issuance, and growing disparity within credit markets, flexibility has become increasingly valuable. And so your takeaway should be that bonds are not like stocks. They are far different. And treating them the same through just trying to passively index all the time can introduce risks that only show up when markets are stressed. All right, let's keep things moving and get to another listener question now.
Luke and Justin, this is Dan from Walnut Creek. First of all, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about Cheniere Energy, stock symbol LNG. Hasn't been doing too well lately, and I've been thinking about selling it. But I ran across an article from Insider Monkey, not familiar with them really, and they think that Cheniere has a lot of upside potential, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Thank you very much for your help. Bye.
Cheniere Energy, it's a Houston-based liquefied natural gas company, hence the ticker LNG, and it's the largest U.S. exporter of LNG, and really among the largest in the world. Their business spans liquefaction, export of natural gas overseas, and LNG and gas marketing. That's had a rough year, down 11.87% year-to-date, down 17.95% over the past 3 months. It's a fairly big company, $40 billion market cap, but has quite a bit of debt, $25 billion in debt, though $3 billion in cash, so about 22 is where its net debt stands. So what's a good thing here, right? We already talked about it. In a time where we are trying to export energy, when there's a huge demand for energy, it is one of the leading exporters of energy. Its production and capacity has expanded. Its dividend has been consistently growing. And they have spent a lot of money on buying shares back, on returning capital to shareholders. And you can't ignore there is a global demand tailwind here. But over the past 2 years, it's underperformed its industry pretty significantly. Underperformed by 10.8% in 2024, underperforming by 5.7% this year. And so you have here similar risks that you have with really any commodity name, the commodity pricing cycle, right? Your return is going to be heavily predicated upon the underlying commodity dynamics. You also have that if you're searching for yield. I mean, this is a pretty modestly yielding energy name, to be quite frank. So certainly, if that's your intent here, that's really not where you should be. And the energy sector has been a bit volatile to begin with. You know, recently, they had earnings. Earnings were fine. I mean, they're trading just below their average, not near their low here. But, you know, they've been breaking down from a momentum perspective for about 6, 7, 8 months now. Heading into the end of the year, they're certainly not rallying, down 0.21% today when a lot of the energy sector was doing particularly well. Now, I don't think it's at a breakdown point where I would be like, we got to sell this now. But I'm hesitant, given recent momentum and recent price movement, to say that this is where you should be allocating your capital. So I think there's a lot of great energy names out there. There are so many of them because the demand for energy is and will continue to be growing dramatically. So why be in one that has been amongst the weakest performers in that space? That is Cheniere Energy, Inc., ticker LNG. Thanks for the call. 2025 is nearly over, and global stock markets are closing near record highs, with investors buoyed by enthusiasm around AI, around unusually strong retail focus, and to the surprise of many, in a way, including myself, incredibly strong credit. Beneath those headline gains, though, the year was anything but calm. It was marked by sharp volatility, by several long-standing market relationships breaking down. And the biggest shock, of course, came in April, when the president's sweeping tariff announcements briefly made the U.S. trade like a fragile emerging market, triggering simultaneous sell-offs in stocks, bonds, and the dollar. Although markets stabilized after tariffs were scaled back, investor confidence in U.S. treasuries as a crisis-proof haven, it was dented. It's left the dollar a bit weaker and foreign investors more inclined to hedge currency risk. That's one thing we saw, right? What did we see this year? We also saw equity leadership flip a bit. The US markets started lagging Europe and emerging markets for the first time in years, despite America's central role in the AI boom. We saw European stocks surge on fiscal stimulus, on defense spending, while once troubled countries like Greece, Italy, and Spain, they outperformed by helping, you know, finance a lot of this investment. But overall, what we saw was emerging markets, they stole the spotlight. South Korea's market was soaring. Emerging equities beat developed markets by a wide margin. And one thing we all wanted to see as well was a central trend. Central banks turning a bit more dovish, cutting short-term rates across much of the world. While at the same time, long-term bond yields, well, they failed to fall, not even in lockstep, but in some cases, they rose. That disconnect fueled, throughout the year, a talk of this debasement trade, as investors worried that early rate cuts and heavier government borrowing could reignite inflation. Another big trend we saw this year, Bitcoin, not digital gold. It did not live up to its billing as a digital gold. It fell over the year, while gold has surged more than 60% and silver has more than doubled. This contrast reinforces the idea that, you know, Bitcoin, it trades more like a proxy for risk appetite, for tech optimism, than a true inflation hedge. I think that at the end of the year, as I said before, you tend to need to take stock of all that has happened. Try and process, try and digest, figure out what that tells you for next year. So with all these trends, all these massive changes, keep those in mind and how they might affect the next 6 months and all of 2026. Hang on, our work continues in just a moment. Hello, investors. Lou Guerrero here with a quick heads up and an invite. This year, we're doing something brand new. The first ever InvestTalk Holiday Special. And it drops December 18th exclusively on our YouTube channel. It's going to be a fun end-of-year episode where we look back at the biggest market themes of 2025, highlight a few lessons we're carrying into 2026, and choose the caller question of the year, plus a couple surprises you won't get in our regular format. To watch the InvestTalk Holiday Special, head over to YouTube and search InvestTalk with two T's, or use the link in today's show notes. And while you're there, subscribe and hit the bell so you don't miss it on December 18th. Looks like we got time for one more question before we head into our next break. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of voicemail questions recently, so let's just keep tackling more YouTube questions. This one from Anthony Lombardo on ticker HSAI. It says, hello, Justin and Luke. Wondering your thoughts on Hesai Group, ticker HSAI. Well, Hesai Group is a China-headquartered technology company. It designs, develops, and manufactures LiDAR, which is light detection and ranging solutions, sensors that help vehicles and robots see their surroundings. LiDAR products are used in advanced driver assistance systems. And, you know, recently there's from car companies that are trying to get driverless cars, right? LiDAR is a critical component there. That's certainly been a driver here of this technology. And frankly, it's just gotten a lot cheaper over time. It's put themselves in a position within the market. Year to date, they're up 64.62%. Over the past 52 weeks, they are up 85.26%. Crazy returns over this past year. Now, they are still, you know, trading about where they IPO'd a couple years ago. Revenue growth has been pretty solid, up from 50.4 to 44.8 in the past 5 years. Right, that growth is stellar, 41.8% on an annualized basis. Net income projected to be positive for the first time. Here's the thing, right? This is a newer company. This is a technology that is becoming more and more adopted, but from a financial position, it's just not quite there yet for me. And at the same time, it's trading at 36.8 times price to forward-looking earnings, 8.9 times price to sales. A little bit expensive for not a lot to show for it. So for now, I like the idea. I think that LiDAR, like I said, in robotics and delivery automation and logistics automation and autonomous driving, it's critical. It's a critical component. So, as I said, for now, I'd keep this on my watch list, see how it progresses in terms of its financial position. Once it starts to recover a bit, has a bit of profitability over time, then would I add HSAI Group, ticker HSAI. This is Invest Talk. I'm Lou Guerrero. We have one goal here each and every day. It was our goal last year. It was our goal this year. And it will continue to be our goal in 2026 to help make you a better and more informed investor, to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, our final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
. 2025 is almost out the door, but you've still got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are on the job. Call anytime, 24/7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. What is your rule of thumb or guidance for a cash position in your portfolio? Are you in the kind of 3, 5, potentially 10% range any time given throughout the year? And then looking ahead into 2026, as we get into Q1 and Q2 and some potential volatility, what kind of cash position are you considering would be a good percentage for those potential times? Look forward to the answer on the podcast. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
That's a great question. So cash can be a important part of your portfolio for many reasons. One, it gives you the opportunity to deploy when there are market pullbacks. And it's also just consistently going to be coming into your portfolio from distributions, from share buybacks, from dividends. And over time, you're going to want to spend that, because we know over longer periods of time, the best way to improve your expected returns is to be invested in the market. And a lot of things drive how much cash you should have. When there's heightened volatility, you probably want more cash in order to be able to deploy. We have, over the past year, been able to get away with holding more cash in your portfolio because yields have been so high. Now, that's certainly changing and has been changing. And so when the risk return, because again, investing is about risk as much as it is about return, when the risk return starts to change, well, that's when you may want to evaluate how much cash you have. There is no right answer. There truly is no right answer. It depends on your risk tolerance. It depends on the market environment. But I will say that including cash, allocations and cash in your portfolio is always wise, because when the market starts to be stressed is when you want to invest. Thanks for the call. As the AI-driven rally is starting to show signs of wobbling, investors are once again looking for defensive shelter amongst consumer staples and other forms of bond proxies. Now, historically, companies selling everyday necessities, well, they've tended to outperform during major market drawdowns because their cash flows remain relatively predictable when growth starts to falter. In downturns like the dot-com bust, the 2008 financial crisis, the 2022 inflation sell-off, consumer staples generally held up better than the S&P 500 as investors prioritized stability. And even in 2022, when the S&P dropped about 25%, General Mills, Hershey, Campbell's, J.M. Smucker, they managed to post gains. More recently, similar defensive behavior started to resurface during market stress like Liberation Day back in April, which reinforced staples' reputation as a short-term hedge. That protection, however, has often been fleeting, and over the past 3 years, many big food stocks have lagged badly as the broader market surged. And oftentimes, a lot of these staple ETFs have charged excessive fees for companies that are easy to secure. Structural pressures are also weighing on the sector, including healthier eating habits, the rise of weight loss drugs, and intensifying competition from cheaper store brands. As consumers start to trade down after years of food inflation, Retailers like Walmart, like Costco, are benefiting, while branded manufacturers, well, they're forced to cut prices in order to protect volumes. Looking ahead to 2026, wider adoption of weight loss drugs could further dampen demand for these high-calorie foods, heavily processed foods, raising risks for traditional packaged food companies. Selectivity matters here, and companies that align with long-term shifts may be better positioned thanks to trends towards at-home cooking and healthier meals. Geographic diversification also offers a buffer, with global players less exposed to U.S.-specific consumer pressures and benefiting from easing input costs. Staples can still provide shelter in volatile markets, but the real challenge is distinguishing resilient franchises from value traps created by lasting changes in how consumers eat, drink, and shop. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you can always get at iTunes and Spotify. And while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. As always, if today's show made you think about your taxes, your retirement, your whole financial picture, whether you're saving enough for your kids' education, anything, anything at all, and you would like to have another pair of eyes, Justin and I would love to speak with you. And in fact, we speak with investors just like you each and every day. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring a little bit of clarity and confidence to your financial life. If that sounds interesting, just head over to investtalk.com and hit the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.